my happy home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Hit the rowdy road, many kinds I've met there, many stories told me all of the way to get there. Ooh. So on and on I go, the seconds tick, the time out. There's so much left to know when I'm on.
Well, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the Listen button. Unspun is a call-in show. We invite questions and comments from our listeners. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. We are fortunate today to have Colleen Rowley as our guest. Colleen is a former FBI special agent and division counsel whose May 2002 memo to the FBI director exposed some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures and was named one of Time Magazine's Persons of the Year in 2002. Colleen Rowley wrote to the FBI director again in February 2003 with some hard questions about the reliability of the evidence being adduced to justify the impending invasion of Iraq. She also warned before the U.S. launched its war in Iraq that it would prove counterproductive and likely spawn even more terrorist attacks, which FBI and counterterrorism officials would be helpless to prevent. As many note, we have now seen in Brussels and elsewhere. As an attorney, she argued the legality of the ongoing drone assassination program and domestic surveillance. As a whistleblower, she received the Sam Adams Award in 2002 and continues to support other whistleblowers and truth-tellers like Chelsea Manning, Thomas Drake, William Binney, and Edward Snowden, to name a few. She is regularly published in the Huffington Post and other publications. Her articles, 10 years after Iraq, reconfirms and updates her original analysis of the failed war on terror launched by neocons after 9/11. Well, let's welcome one of the great truth tellers in America, Colleen Rowley. Welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth telling.
Yes, thanks for having me, and happy spring.
Yeah, happy spring. Yeah, it's beautiful here. You're up in Michigan, right?
No, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
It's, 28. Yeah, we have 28 degrees outside and a wind chill, but it's all sunny, so at least we have the sun out.
Well, you might want a vacation down here with us. We're pretty nice, about 75 this afternoon, and everything's blossoming, so we have a spring has sprung here.
Yeah, all these terrible series of tornadoes that have been hitting probably in some part due to climate change. I don't know, but because it seems awfully early for, not just one. I mean, this is maybe the third or fourth one now, killer tornadoes that have come through the South. So can't complain as long as you don't get hit by one of those hurricanes or earthquakes or whatever.
Yeah, we feature people that talk to climate change issues, and we're actually something like 15 degrees above normal for here, and this has become the norm here too. So abnormal is becoming the new norm, I guess. Well, let's go back to your area of expertise, and of course, something that many of our listeners still don't understand, and you were at the epicenter of the 9/11 pre-9/11 intelligence failures, actually, and and you wrote shortly after that. Let me quote this. I think it was interdepartmental or something that you wrote, but this is, an excerpt. But jokes were actually being made that the key FBI HQ personnel had to be spies or moles who were actually working for Osama bin Laden to have so undercut Minneapolis's efforts. And so maybe you can start there and explain what you meant by that, and also maybe we could think about why that happened. How could the FBI and other agencies, as far as that goes, be so unprepared and so inept at such an important time?
There's a lot of reasons, and I think it would take more than an hour to really unravel it all. My outrage after 9/11 was simply that it was all being covered up. And, you know, I didn't really write my memo until the Joint Intelligence Committee was formed. If you remember, people have just shut this out of their memory now, but after 9/11, Dick Cheney actually called up the Senate Senate Majority Leader Daschle, and told him that we were not to have accountability and there was not to be any inquiry into 9/11. You know, they're evildoers and they hate our freedom, and that's the end of it. And so for several months, there was no investigation whatsoever. And in fact, all of the, you know, what one of our agents later called testifying in the Moussaoui case called criminal negligence. On the part, it was not just, by the way, the FBI. It was probably worse, the CIA and the NSA. And again, all of these agencies before 9/11, especially in the spring and the summer of 2001, had so much information flowing in that the 9/11 Commission later, 3 years later, when the report finally came out with its bit of truth, it said that the system was blinking red. There was so much information coming in, and that the director of Central Intelligence of all the intelligence community at the time, he was, now it's Clapper, but at the time it was George Tenet. He wasn't just the head of the CIA; he was the director of Central Intelligence. He was said to have his hair on fire. Same with Richard Clark, the counterterrorism chief, and they were, you know, desperately trying to warn Condi Rice. Condi Rice just brushed Richard Clark off in July of 2001. The FBI director was trying to argue with the Attorney General Ashcroft about terrorism. And this is, by the way, I'm not, this is all from the official 9/11 Commission report. This is not me. This is what I'm saying is all in. The problem is it took 3 years for this to come out. But the acting director in the summer of 2001 was a guy named Picard, and he testified to the 9/11 commission that he told Ashcroft that he, you know, about terrorism and terrorism, and Ashcroft said, "I don't want to hear about terrorism," and actually Ashcroft in August of 2001 ranked terrorism, international terrorism, as his lowest priority. He ranked violent crime as his highest priority. So this, I'm just giving you the merest tip of the iceberg of these issues. But all of this information flowing in, they called it, you know, later they used the term the dots were not connected. Okay, there's reasons why these dots were connected. Large, for starters, because, you know, people know that there's no accountability, and so you're always better not to take action, because you'll never be held accountable if you fail. Officials have not been ever held accountable. And then to this day, by the way, even the truth about why the CIA never told the FBI that two of the terrorist suspects, at the time, there were only, I think 16 people on the CIA's terrorist watch list. 16. Several of them, by the way, were the actual terrorists, turned out to be the pilots of the planes that flew into the World Trade Center, etc. And two of them, they had been following for a couple of years since a very important Al-Qaeda meeting that the CIA had monitored in Kuala Lumpur. And they knew that two of them had visas to come to the United States. None of this was told to the FBI. And so finally, they learn of this when it's too late, like a couple of weeks before 9/11. And one of our agents in New York City is pulling his hair out and saying, you know, because you could have found them easily. They were under their true names. They could have easily been found. But the FBI was not told. To this day, how many years later, nearly 15 years later, the CIA has never come clean about why they did not tell the FBI about these two that had come into California that do turn out later to be the pilots. So when you said we're at the epicenter in Minnesota, what happened here was there was a terrorist suspect who was connected to the other 19. And two whistleblower flight instructors called up the FBI. Actually, they separately did this. They went against their own flight school and customers and everything else and said, you know, we have the most suspicious student we've ever had here. And our agent, who was himself a pilot and was very astute, he was also prior Navy intelligence, he ran out within a day. They did try to interview, and they found out enough additional information that they were so worried they took him. His name was Moussaoui. He was a French-Moroccan, and he was connected to bin Laden, et cetera. They took him into custody. Now, they tried to get authorization as an emergency measure. When Bush stood up and said he had to authorize warrantless monitoring, he always left that part out, but there were always emergency methods of getting information without even a warrant. You have to later show a warrant to a judge, but you can, as an emergency, even do this real quickly without a warrant. And so our agents were seeking emergency authorization to search Moussaoui's belongings, which, if you're following the law, that's what you're supposed to do. And and that's where my what you just read is our headquarters then thwarted that. It got so bad. This went on for a couple, 3 weeks, and in the meantime, our agents had notified both Great Britain and France, and the French authorities immediately sent back information that Moussaoui had been involved in recruiting and working for the Chechen leader terrorist. His name was Ibn Khattab. And there's another memo. Again, I told you all this information flowing in about attacks being imminent. There's one in April of 2001. If people Google "The Terrible Missed Chance" by Philip Sheehan, they can find the whole story. This memo just got buried, and it's not even clear that they made it available to the 9/11 Commission. But the title of that memo was "Osama bin Laden and Ibn Khattab are entwined and are going to attack." So, you know, and then our assistant directors, who were the recipients of that memo, afterwards claimed that they had not seen it. So all of these things, and again, I'm telling you the just the tip of the iceberg. It's so much worse than this. Were covered up after 9/11 because no one wanted to know the truth about these failures. Certainly the FBI, the officials didn't want anyone to know the truth, but the Bush administration had completely alternative plans. They had a prior agenda, one of which is they wanted to launch war on a country that had nothing at all to do with 9/11, and in fact was an enemy of the Al-Qaeda group, of the fundamentalists. It was the secular government of Iraq. And, you know, you may or may not like Saddam Hussein, but he certainly was not involved with Al-Qaeda or the 9/11 attacks. So they began to lie after 9/11, immediately to lie. This is all in Richard Clark's book, by the way, because Richard Clark, as counterterrorism official, Bush and Cheney went to him like the day of 9/11 or the day after. People are, you know, horrible scene, you know, horrible, terrorizing thing, and Bush and Cheney are already telling Richard Clark, you gotta find out how Iraq is behind this so we can attack Iraq. And so so then we began to do these all of this prior agenda that had existed. And a lot of it is this neocon ideology of destabilizing the Mideast, starting wars all over. They had six or seven countries that they were going to take down in order, three or four of which have already occurred. And then all of the illegal actions, the turning on of warrantless monitoring, the beginning of torture. I mean, they say within just a couple of weeks that they're going to start torturing people. So all of this begins, and again, the people of the United States have no idea. I mean, people criticize 9/11.
Let me interrupt you, Colleen. We'll come back to this. You're listening to Unspun, an Experiment of Truth Telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Colleen Rowley, former FBI special agent and whistleblower, and we're discussing the intelligence failures and manipulations leading to the failed war on terror. Our call-in number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Yeah, we know from day one in the White House that the Bush-Cheney neocons wanted an excuse to invade Iraq, which you've already mentioned, and they called it, quote, in one of their papers, a new Pearl Harbor, which they thought was necessary to put in place all these draconian laws, in which you've also referred to. So I guess the question for a lot of people and for me, were they criminally negligent or were they complicit? It seems like an obvious question, and everything points to they were complicit. As you say, they were covering up from day one and trying to divert people and the message over to Iraq on day one, day two. So which is it? Are they complicit or are they criminally negligent?
Well, when I was saying that our agent called FBI headquarters criminally negligent in having thwarted the investigation of Mousawi. Now, he's not talking about the Bush administration. That is simply talking about officials. And you cannot attribute a monolithic intent to a government, for instance, that is comprised of thousands of people, everybody from the lowest clerk, file clerk, all the way up to a president. So there's different officials, and they all have different intents and agendas. The neocon group, which actually wasn't that large at the time of 9/11, there was a number of people in this project for the New American Century. I think there were 40 to 50 signers of it. It was founded by Robert Kagan and William Kristol, but people like Rumsfeld and Cheney. I don't know if Cheney might have signed it.
I think he did, and Jeb Bush was on there.
Yes, and we even have a Minnesotan, Vin Weber, Paula Dombrowski. There were a couple of females that signed it. But essentially, these neocons, even then, now that 40-some core, people know the Poderitzes and the Kagans, and a lot of them are even intermarried. Their wives are involved, too. So that group that goes all the way back to a segment of Leon Strauss, the Straussians, which is this neoconservative ideology, and Trotsky. One dissident group of Trotsky became the neocons. If you look it up on Wikipedia, it's quite interesting how this evolved. Because originally they were Trotskyites, they were communists, and then they evolved and they went far right. But eventually, this group itself had these plans. They did. They were completely complicit. And part of the reason why is they believe in utilitarian ethics. Ends justify the means. Strauss himself had a concept called the noble lie. And so it's a very nice ego defense because you believe that you can lie to people for their own good. These are dumb people, and you have to lie to them for a noble cause. The neocons, of course, believe in war as maybe the highest nobility cause. And so anything that they can lie about to start a war, to them, that's noble and justified in their own heads. So, it's a concept that's difficult to understand unless you know that utilitarian ends justify the means. And Madeleine Albright said half a million Iraqi children had died, and she said, but it's worth it. What she was doing is she's subscribing to that ends justify the means ethics, utilitarian ethics. And it involves lying, a lot of deceit. And so that group, going back to what I was saying about Iraq, they were so successful in their propagandizing that they were able to get around 70% of the American public to believe that Saddam was behind 9/11. And that figure of 70, that's an amazing lie, and it's an amazing effectiveness when there's absolutely zero proof that Saddam had. In fact, there was tons of proof. The CIA tried to argue and stuff. There was tons of proof that he was an enemy of al-Qaeda, would have nothing to do with them, and had actually gone after Zarqawi, who was the beginning of ISIS. So to pull that off is amazing, but it does show you also how your mainstream media, which I noticed in your opening for Unspun, you're talking about the corporate media. It shows you how when the corporate media gets behind any kind of a lie like this, it can work for a while. May not work forever. Eventually, people kind of see through it. But for a while, Mark Twain had a good quote. He said, "A lie goes around the world while the truth gets its pants on." And that's kind of the problem that we have when all of our credible media is telling us something, people really cannot think for themselves and get above it. And unfortunately, those 40-some, 50, whatever they were, that core neocon group in the 90s, after 9/11, it has grown now to thousands of people in think tanks. There's kind of two branches of the neocons. On the right, they're called the neocons, but on the left, the humanitarian interventionists. And they're in these think tanks, at least a couple dozen major think tanks in Washington, D.C. now are controlled by these neocons. And they're at highest levels of the military-industrial complex. They're in they've gotten a lot of Congress people, subscribing to this. And the American people, I think we're kind of still in the same boat. We're being misled on, and by a lot of things. And we're increasing terror as a bottom line. We're increasing terrorism by this kind of whack-a-mole military efforts all over, or starting wars and regime changes, taking out a leader that at least is keeping a country intact and creating a vacuum in that country of leadership that then terrorist groups rush in to fill. That happened in Libya and Syria, Iraq itself, Yemen now, it's happened. So unfortunately, unless people really understand this, and most people don't, they think, oh, we got to fight, we're in a war, we got to fight the terrorists. And what they're doing is they're actually, terrorism itself has increased exponentially, which is what I warned in my memo back in 2003, right before we attacked Iraq.
Yeah, what I was thinking about the media, our mutual friend Ray McGovern, he calls them the fawning corporate media, and I use that term pretty often on my show. And as you point out, they have been, I'm going to say complicit. I don't want to mince any words. I think they're complicit. We know that Libby was involved with the New York Times reporter that purposely brought back questionable information and spread it all over the front page of the New York Times just before the invasion, the illegal invasion, I would add, of Iraq. We were so misled, and people are still suffering under those misconceptions actually propagandized through those media outlets that were credited. The New York Times was the paper of record, right? But not so much anymore. People understand, I think, as you said, people are catching on, but it still goes on. Every day in the media, we see something else. We saw we see a couple of things: the demonization of Putin in Russia and Assad now in Syria, and this is a constant daily thing with misinformation we know is incorrect. I believe you pointed out about the Syrian conflict that Assad was blamed for using chemical weapons, and the fact is there was no evidence. Is that right?
Very little evidence. There's actually more evidence now emerging that the sarin that was used in 2013 near Ghouta is the place where this attack occurred. That attack, Kerry said 35 times in a speech a few days after the sarin attack, he said 35 times, we know it was Assad, we know it was Assad. And Kerry, by the way, unfortunately, has kind of fallen into a lot of this initially. I don't know that in the last 2 years, maybe he's done a little bit better, but initially he fell solidly into that neocon thinking, as, by the way, did Hillary Clinton. And she's completely... I just gave a long interview on Op-Ed News and based on a website called Hillary is a Neocon. So she was one of the main reasons for this initially, too. But they of course, went out with no evidence at the time and said, you know, we know it's Assad. Now, what has emerged is that it probably was Turkish people that somehow got precursor chemicals down to rebel groups, and this was not the real strong sarin. It was a kind of homemade sarin that the terrorist rebels themselves, the opposition to Assad, fabricated. Now, Clapper, the director of national intelligence, actually went into Obama because there was this kind of a sea change where Obama had said, well, I guess I announced before that if there are chemical weapons were used in Syria, that the United States would have to do something, and we're going to do disciplinary bombing is what they were going to do. That's what Kerry announced that was going to happen. The United States was going to bomb Syria as a discipline against Assad having used chemical weapons. But then Clapper apparently went in, and by the way, we know this from Obama himself in a long interview he gave to Jeffrey Goldberg called The Obama Doctrine. So if you Google The Obama Doctrine by Goldberg, just about 3-4 weeks ago this came out, this long interview, but Obama then was briefed that no, it was not a slam dunk that it was Assad's forces, that there must have been some evidence that it was different groups. And that's when Obama I think astutely said, okay, we'll have Congress decide. I'm not going to just order disciplinary bombing of Syria. And also by the UK in their parliament, had voted not this time to do as Blair did, go along with the United States. They had said, you know, if the United States wants to bomb Syria, you know, repeat the mistake of Iraq, just go ahead. We're not going to be a part of that. So that had happened, too. And then Obama said, I'm not going to do this on my own. It'll have to be Congress. And in the meantime, a lot of people in the country went to their congressperson and said, why are we doubling down on this mistake again? And it was stopped. Now, what's interesting, one of the websites, by the way, that I write for, Ray McGovern writes for, some other CIA, retired CIA and intelligence people also write for, and he has just a lot of very smart foreign policy commentators and observers now that are writing for him, is Consortium News. It's Robert Perry, and if you watch if you read that, it's kind of like some other, you know, good sites. You'll really learn a lot. But going back now to this Obama doctrine that came out about 3 weeks ago, where Obama is explaining why he has not exactly followed. He followed Bush's footsteps to a large extent in the Mideast. He escalated in Afghanistan. He allowed Hillary Clinton to argue him into bombing Libya. But he did kind of pull back just in the last couple of years, and especially in the Iran agreement. Instead of what the neocons wanted, of course, was to start war in Iran. That was part of the whole 6 or 7 countries. That was the last country they wanted to take down in that plan before. But Obama did not go along with it, and he got the Europeans and the P5+1 group to do an agreement with Iran. So that was the Obama doctrine. He was going against this neocon, what he calls the playbook. He doesn't call it neocon. He calls it the Washington, D.C. playbook, but it is the neocon's playbook that he has gone against. Since that Obama doctrine came out, if you watch the mainstream news and the op-eds, for instance, in the Washington Post, the New York Times, they have all come out lambasting Obama doctrine. You know, calling him a chicken, essentially saying, you know, we could solve the world's problems if Obama wasn't such a chicken and was not so risk adverse and would follow what we tell him to do, which is, again, bombing a lot of places and taking out a lot of countries' leadership, including, as you just quickly, you know, mentioned, Putin. They actually now want to go and take out the Russian government, which is God has as many nuclear bombs as we have, and they're playing a form of dangerous brinkmanship where they're putting U.S. troops right up to the border of Russia right now and trying to provoke Putin into something where they can actually, you know, start World War III, essentially. The neocons, it's hard to imagine how insane anybody could be, because you'd say, well, why would you want nuclear war? You're going to die. Your kids will die. Well, how could you like this? But the neocons are just completely reckless. In a way, they're psychopathic, because they don't have any concerns about consequences. They believe they make their own reality. They also, Michael Ledeen, which was one of the famous neocons who is believed actually to be behind this, the fraud of the Niger yellow cake, that also was one of the lies that Saddam was getting yellow cake, and Michael Ledeen is apparently the guy who planted false stories and stuff, but he's a top neocon. And he's bragged that our middle name is Creative Chaos. Most people would not take that as a compliment, to be saying your middle name is Creative Chaos. But they think that they can use violence in a creative way. And again, like I said, they think that there's a noble cause here of achieving control over the world, which is what they call full spectrum dominance.
Let me interrupt you here. We've got the bottom of the hour, and I need to do a little station ID, Colleen, and we'll come right back to that. You're listening to Unspun on KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista. KKRN is a community radio station and is funded by listeners and underwriters like yourself. If you'd like to support our efforts, go to our website at kkrn.org and click on the donate button. I have one public service announcement here, and it's the continuation of the Climate Change Coalition in Redding's they've been doing a series of documentaries, and this one is going to be on Tuesday, April 12th. It's called Regrarianism, Re-Regrarianism, a Rebooting Agriculture for the Next 10,000 Years. It's a video by Darren Doherty, and it's produced by the Bioneers, and that's going to be at the First United Methodist Church. That's on the corner of East and South Streets in Redding. That's 1825 East Street, and it's going to be at 6:30 p.m., so show up a little bit early, and you can get a little closer to the front there. But that's April 12th at the First United Methodist Church in Redding at 6:30 p.m., so that is well worth attending. A lot of good information there. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Colleen Rowley, former FBI special agent and whistleblower. We're discussing the intelligence failures and the manipulations leading to the failed war on terror. What Colleen has said, that the neocons call creative chaos, and it certainly is chaos. Let me ask you this, Colleen. Anybody that's watching could not argue any point that you've made, anybody paying attention. So the question is, how does this serve the American public, if at all? And if not, who does it serve and who does it empower?
Well, you know, there's that famous thing about the 1% and the 99%. But the military, that's kind of crude. That's kind of a rough thing. Well, the wealthier people in any society are always going to benefit more from the military-industrial complex and the wars, etc. So, I mean, that's very rough. The main benefactors of all of the war profits are the military-industrial complex. And all of these contractors, when we privatize the military, obviously people know Blackwater, but there are really thousands. There's thousands now of contractors that have made hand over fist money, millions and billions of dollars. Lockheed is the number one weapon maker in the world. And then, unfortunately, Obama has been the top arms sales. He has been involved in the top arms sales around the world. So if you are telling that you're telling the Eastern Europe, the former Soviet bloc countries, that Russia is going to come take you over again. Now they are all buying different types of weapons that the United States sells. Saudi Arabia, of course, which is the origin of the fundamental Islamic terrorism, beginning with Al Qaeda, but also ISIS and all of the Wahhabi beheading type terrible terrorists come from our ally, Saudi Arabia. And in fact, to this day, I'm digressing a little bit here, but that's another part of the 9/11 report that's been blacked out. The Joint Intelligence Committee's report, it's the Joint Intelligence Committee's report, not the 9/11 Commission report.
Is that the famous 28 missing pages?
Right, and that goes back to the funding of the 19 terrorist suspects, 15 of whom were Saudis. 15 of the 19 were Saudis. There's some evidence that shows that high Saud family officials were funding this all. Okay, that those 28 pages have been blacked out ever since this report came out, and the reason for it is because the United States is treating Saudi Arabia as an ally in the Middle East. Well, we're telling the American people that we're fighting Al Qaeda, and you know all the speeches Obama gives about ISIS and Al Qaeda being our enemies, but in essence, we are also supporting Al Qaeda and ISIS indirectly through Saudi Arabia, and by arming Saudi Arabia now, which is using our arms, by the way, to bomb its neighbor Yemen, and actually Turkey is another country that's been involved in supporting the insurrection, and especially in Syria because of the Kurd issue. So foreign policy is complicated because they are trying to use dissident groups that later turn out to basically be Frankensteins. All throughout foreign policy history, the United States has tried to use, back when we wanted to get the Soviet Union out of Afghanistan, the RCIA, Charlie Wilson's War, armed the Mujahideen. But that turns out to be the beginnings of the Taliban and Al Qaeda. We actually were on the side of the Chechen terrorist. Why? Because he was fighting against the Soviet Union. So we are always doing this, but then we always have to change these alliances that we have. And most of it's covert, because you could never, I have a feeling that even people listening are going to say, what the heck is she talking about? It is so difficult to explain to the American people how foreign policy is actually working to try to achieve that what they call full spectrum dominance, that you can, as an official, you'll just say, well, it's too hard for me to explain, so what I know just better stay with me. And you know, lots of times little bits leak out, and Seymour Hersh and you know, other investigative reporters will get parts of this, and you're right. If you follow it, you would, none of this is surprising. But the American people are basically just working hard, coming home, and if they have listened to 5 minutes of television, and that news that they're getting from Fox and whatever is all slanted. It is all spun in different ways. And it's basically to make them believe they're on the good versus evil, a very simplistic narrative. We're the good guys with freedom and love in our hearts, and we're trying to stop genocides, and you know, maybe we don't always succeed in trying to rebuild the Middle East and make them democratic and have human rights. Maybe things are not. I mean, this is what kind of our news is. I'm paraphrasing what our news is kind of telling us. You know, maybe we're benevolently motivated, and sometimes we just don't carry it out correctly. That's kind of what we're told. No, the truth is a lot different. The truth is that they know that when they go in, again, this is really, to a large extent, the neocon ideology of having violence break out that does destabilize, because in that vacuum, the hope is that the United States then can put in a kind of a puppet government, somebody that's going to be friendly to the United States. And this almost has never worked. That's the other part of it. If you are very pragmatic in the foreign policy, there's a school called the realist school of foreign policy. And so if you are a realist about what works and what doesn't work, you're also very much against this neocon methodology. Because why? Because it really has never worked. And in fact, it's all blown back on the United States. So when you ask about who's profiting, the military-industrial complex is profiting. They know how stupid this is, most of them, but how can they complain when they're putting billions into their pockets? The other people, that our politicians, are profiting off of it. They're using the war because James Madison always, you know, this was one of the warnings, having learned from King George when they founded the United States, that you cannot let to have an all-powerful war president then control the United States, because a president will always want to go to war because it empowers that official. Bush's polls soared up after 9/11. And so our politicians are profiting from this, even it's funny because most of our politicians now are what they call chicken hawks. They're not Eisenhowers. They have no military experience themselves. And yet Hillary Clinton's a great example. She wants to obliterate, she called for obliterating Iran. She was behind the bombing of Libya. You know, of course, you could never have, can you imagine having Hillary Clinton on a war zone? I mean, same with Cruz, same with Rubio. All of these people are armchair warriors. And in a way, they're more dangerous than even somebody who is in the military, because they have to compensate and pretend that they're like twice as vicious, and Hillary Clinton calls herself muscular. You know, I'm twice as muscular as a man in wanting to bomb and kill for control, et cetera. So those are the people who are profiting. The corporations, not all the corporations, when it blows back on the United States, and now it's really blowing back on Europe. Europe is in a real crisis, both from some of the terrorist attacks, but also from the war refugees that are flooding in. And they don't know how to handle it. They're trying to get Greece to stop the refugees from leaving. They're trying to bribe Turkey to send some of the refugees back to Syria. I mean, it is a terrible situation for Europe. So by having gone along with a lot of these post 9/11 wars and illegal actions, they've already reaped the consequences in Europe. The United States, I think, is starting to reap some of the consequences too. Not only in something like the San Bernardino and the Boston bombing and some of the other, we've had a limited number of international terrorist-inspired attacks in the United States. But we also have something else, which is called the active shooters. And I think the active shooters, which are, sometimes shooting 20, 30 people in a church, in schools, in theaters, in parking lots. And this number of active shooters in the United States has almost tripled in the last couple of years. We just had one that shot at an airport, shot a state trooper. And the news will have these almost every other day. They'll say, well, we don't know the motive. No one knows the motive. But this violence, this violent culture that the United States has established now, where war is normalized, and we hear every day about how we have to be stronger and fight harder and kill more terrorists, etc., that seeps back, and it seeps back in militarizing our own police and making them more, thinking they want to be more like military, where they get more leeway to shoot. I actually taught the use of deadly force in the FBI, and there's supposed to be a strict standard that you can only shoot in self-defense when there's an imminent threat. But that's all been eroded, and that actually was also something I warned about in my Iraq memo about Iraq to the director before it started. So you have the militarization, but you also have people, just average people out there, some of them mentally disabled, but many of them not that abnormal, thinking that the way to solve my personal problems is what I just saw in every movie from Hollywood and what I hear on the nightly news every night, which is get a gun and shoot a lot of people. And the media will, blow it up and I'll be famous and I'll go down in a blaze of glory. And so this culture that we've established, which is making war normal for us, is also now having these really unintended consequences. And then of course the suicides as well, the suicides and homicides that have resulted from military service. And I actually directly and indirectly know a half a dozen people who have committed suicide now. Actually, it's more than that. It's almost up to about 10 people that I know, some of them I just met once or something, that have committed suicide as a result of military service. I personally know that many. And so this is a pretty sad situation, and this is all the blowback. But Americans are not necessarily connecting the dots. I think if they would connect the dots, they'd say, why are we doing this? This makes no sense. Just to make Lockheed shareholders richer, et cetera. I mean, this doesn't make sense.
Let me interrupt you for the last time. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Colleen Rowley, former FBI special agent and whistleblower. We're discussing the intelligence failures and manipulations leading up to the failed war on terror. Our call-in number is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. You have about another 10 minutes if you want to call in and ask Colleen Rowley some questions about 9/11 and how it happened and how it could have been prevented, lots of questions like that. But let's come back to the issues you're talking about here, because with the draconian laws like the Patriot Act and the National Defense Act, we basically, and you're a lawyer, we've basically thrown the rule of law out the window. And with that, much of our civil rights and much of democracy, parts of the Constitution are no longer held to be any kind of defense or anything. We see it with us other whistleblowers. So how do we get out of this? How do we restore democracy and our rights when our government is obsessed with this continual war and full-spectrum dominance, as you call it?
I don't call it that. That is the euphemistic term of the military planners. It's actually in the planning document called full-spectrum dominance. And, you know, we would always see those old Dr. Strangelove movies, you know, those types of things where there'd be some evil, James Bond movies, some kind of evil guy who wants to control the world. Well, that's actually now in the U.S. military planning. You know, it's incredible. I think that is the problem. Our goals have to be, and there, you will hear politicians say that in speeches. Well, Obama said this before he was elected, that we would be a country among other countries, among other nation states, and, you know, treating each other with respect, following international law. Torture is a good example. The way we get back to some sense of normalcy and sanity and less danger for everyone, reducing the risk of nuclear holocaust, which now we're like 2 minutes before midnight on the nuclear doomsday clock. The way that we can kind of push back from that is to go back to the old rule of law. Our laws evolved over hundreds of years. Habeas corpus is going to be 800 years old in a couple of weeks. And that law was not just a nicety. It was not just somebody, oh, this will be a liberal, ethical, nice ideal. No, it evolved over hundreds of years, and so did the law against self-incrimination. You know, it's not because we want to be nice to people, you know, especially if it's a murder or something. It's not that. The reason that the law against torture and against self-incrimination exists is because torture doesn't work. There's actually pragmatic sides to the laws themselves. Otherwise, those laws would have long ago gone away. We wouldn't have a law against torture if it worked. You know, if the witches that they burned after they got them to confess being witches, if they had really been witches, you know what? We would have a law that would allow torture. And so so these laws make sense. And when you have wartime, Cicero said, in times of war, the law falls silent. So the real thing is we've got to curtail the wars. We've got to get back to a rule of law, and you know, and reciprocity. All religions have something like the golden rule, which is treating people as you would want to be treated. That's the underlying basis for all law. We wouldn't even have law if it wasn't for the fact that people want to have some minimum level of reciprocity. So I don't want to risk being tortured myself. So what? Let's have a law that nobody can torture because I don't want to be tortured. And that's what we got to get back to. In wartime, those go away. And in the United, I have a colleague now who's a defense attorney, was a JAG attorney, I should say, from the military, but he defended some of the detainees on Guantanamo. And his name's Todd Pierce. He's a major, or was retired. He's one of our, Ray McGovern has a group called Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and he's one of the people in it as well. And he's written that we actually, since 9/11, if you read those Office of Legal Counsel secret memos that were written, almost none of which, by the way, have ever been rescinded. Just one of the worst ones by John Yoo was rescinded about the organ failure. Everything up to organ failure is not torture. That's the only one I know that's actually been rescinded. The rest of them are all good law, quote unquote, good law. They have not been rescinded. They're bad law. And they establish, according to Todd Pierce, a form of martial law in the United States. And this is what we had during the Civil War, where all dissent is made illegal. Abraham Lincoln, whether he had to do this during the Civil War or not, who knows, but he had editors of newspapers arrested for criticizing the Union, very minor things, sending postcards across the line to the South. People in the North could be arrested. So that is a form of martial law, and that actually is what we're seeing at with our government now, trying at all costs to stop WikiLeaks and setting up insider threat. Like in Orwell, they have insider threat offices in every agency now, looking for someone who could be leaking information, etc. So what we need to do is get back to the rule of law. How we do that through popular will, I will just say, in this election, there is a big choice here. The two parties are the problem, because this war machine has its tentacles into both political parties. And the neocons, by the way, now largely are favoring Hillary Clinton. Robert Kagan, the founder of the Project for the New American Century, went out and endorsed and is advising Hillary Clinton. So she's sold her soul, lock, stock, and barrel to this whole thing. Trump and Bernie Sanders, the two non-establishment candidates, are both have some elements of throttling back on these goals of having intervention around the world to achieve full-spectrum dominance. Trump calls it America First. That's his way of trying to talk about it. He says, we got to use the money that we're spending and why are we spending all this money for Japan and the NATO countries? We should be spending it here in the United States on our own roads. Actually, that's Donald Trump saying that. And then Bernie Sanders, he's kind of quiet. He kind of defers. Yeah, unfortunately, I think he defers way too much to Hillary Clinton, her experience, since she's been wrong at everything. But a Hawaii representative, Tulsi Gabbard, who is a Iraq veteran herself, has really been vocal about how these wars of choice, interventionist, and regime change wars have really been wrong. And she's been giving kind of introductions of him and ads of Bernie Sanders. So I think there's a lot of distinction here that people can act on. You can't just vote. You've got to go out there and try to educate your neighbors about this, and it's easy to do right now. Just find those ads by Tulsi Gabbard. I think those are wonderful. She has the highest amount of credibility, having served in Iraq, and she even resigned from her position as a DNC, Democratic National Campaign co-chair, because she saw what was going on with the Democrats, anointing, quote-unquote, anointing Hillary Clinton. And she's been very active. So I think, I look for the neocons to go after her now, because she's really been brave about this. And I think that neocon establishment, if there's not popular, if the people of our country cannot really wake up and see what's going on, I think that she will be vulnerable herself as a congresswoman. But then, and even Trump, by the way, I just wrote an article for Op-Ed News, Hillary is a neocon, and they were kind of amazed. I said, well, Trump is better than Cruz, and actually, if it came down to voting between Hillary Clinton and Trump, I would have to go with Trump, because he has actually staked out some non-interventionist stances. And Hillary Clinton has done just the opposite. She's part of this whole thing. So I know it's difficult for people who are party partisans to really kind of think outside these group politics or these group identities. But I think that's what's necessary right now. I think there really should be an enormous consensus amongst everyone in the United States, conservatives, progressives, greens, libertarians, everyone in the United States should have an enormous consensus of returning the United States to a more solid rule of law, getting away from this wartime instability and chaos.
The two-party system seems to be coming apart for some of the reasons you just explained. And I'm surprised you came out with that statement, because Susan Sarandon the last week or so has been getting beaten up for making the same obvious statements. So it's interesting, because they've already turned the dogs loose, I think, and they're going to go after anybody that supports Trump. And like you say, Robert Kagan is now endorsed Hillary Clinton, which should be the kiss of death for people that know anything. So I agree wholeheartedly with your assumptions and your conclusions about what's going on. Well, we are almost out of town, less than a minute, and we're going to hear some music come on. That's our cue to kind of shut it down. So, Colleen Rowley, I just want to thank you for being on Unspun with us today. It's been a pleasure and an education.
Yes, anytime.
Well, I might take you up on that, and if you get out this way, let us know. We did a tour with Ray McGovern a couple years back that was very successful, so I think a lot of people would like to see you in person and get a chance to talk with you about this.
That would be great.
All right, well, I'm going to have to say goodbye for now, and you're in about 3 seconds. We're going to hear that music, and it'll be our sign-off time. So once again, thank you for all your work, and thanks for being on with us today.
Bye. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, you've been listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. Our guest today has been Colleen Rowley, former FBI agent, whistleblower in the 2003 run-up to the invasion of Iraq. And I'm going to put some of the links that she suggested and the archives of this show up on KKRN.org. And we're going to be played again on Wednesday afternoons. Apparently, they're going to be rebroadcast this show. So if you missed part of it today, you tune in at 4 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon before Tom Hartman, and you can hear Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling at that time. Next up on KKRN is Peace Talks Radio. Thanks for listening.